find this podcast and others like it at the number one new media network, Podshow.com. Better, faster, stronger. And now with new minty fresh scent.
All the rage. We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Radio.
Windy City Radio.
Windy City Radio.
Windy City Radio.
We're talking mega gay.
Oh, I like that.
I'm Peter Maverick.
This is Richard Knight Jr.
I'm Jim Bennett.
I'm Amy Matheny. Windy City Radio is brought to you in part by
Bud Light. Bud Light, always worth it. And American Airlines, offering the GLBT community exciting vacation packages online at aavacations.com/rainbow.
To Windy City Radio. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Peter Maverick. How are you, Amy?
I'm good. We're rocking and jamming here.
Yeah, I felt the need to bring in a little Pearl Jam and take us back a little
on
bit.
On this spring day.
Yeah, what a gorgeous day in the
gorgeous,
city.
Gorgeous, gorgeous is all I have to say.
So excited that it's coming. You can feel it in the air. It's
yep.
Ready to burst forth.
Yeah, I was in the neighborhoods today. I was downtown. I was at church. Everybody just was, it was great. I was all over this city. I built this city on rock,
on
and,
rock
roll
and roll
today. I really did. I really, really did.
And you're wearing your nice spring blue today.
I am wearing my spring blue with my black leather jacket because it's still Chicago, you know? it would be crazy if around Holy Week, you know, we would be able to actually wear a little Easter bonnet or sundress.
Well, this is your Holy Week. Mine is next week.
Yours is next week?
I'm the Orthodox.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
So, yeah, your Good Friday is this week, my Good Friday is the week after.
That's right, and Passover.
Yeah.
We're in Passover.
Absolutely.
And the whole Lenten season, so it's a, you know, it's a big old time. But
so
I usually like the, like, you know, white pants come, you know, from the South. This is when, like, the white pants start coming out, the hat,
the big bonnet,
orchids, the, you know, no. No. Wrapped my up in my leather jacket, but the sun was out.
Yeah, it was. It was a beautiful afternoon. I was running around frantically buying flatware and stuff to populate my new apartment.
Your new apartment at the corner of Gay and Gay.
Seriously,
you are at the corner of, like,
the homo and sexual. I'm at the intersection of the homosexual.
Belmont. Yeah,
yeah,
you're
I'm
the
right
homo.
There.
Yeah, there you are.
Right there.
You are right there at the corner of Gay and Gay.
Right in the middle of it. But it's good. My cats are finally starting to get back to normal. So
yeah. Are your cats frisky during the springtime of year?
They're frisky all the time. They're like little monkeys.
Yeah.
They run around. They're for anybody who wants to know what they look like, go to radiopeter.com. You can totally see my naked kitties running around.
They're naked.
Yeah, they are naked.
No fur.
None. And actually, I just put a video up so you can download the video and you can see my cats and you can see what my new apartment looks like and all that fun stuff. So
we actually shaved your cats and put their fur on my dog because my dog has their hair. My dog is so horny right now.
Horny.
I mean, she is humping everything that goes.
Wait, she
is,
I mean,
humping,
I know, girl,
everything.
Wow.
Yeah, but she likes the boys. I really thought she was a lesbian, but a man walks in my apartment or my house and she is just going to town. Actually, she's not very discriminate. It doesn't matter.
It
boys
doesn't
or
matter.
Girls. Yeah,
it doesn't
she's
matter.
Just torny as a little June bug.
The bisexual.
I do.
Puppy.
The omnisexual, the pansexual.
The trisexual. She'll try anything.
She will. But I walked out my door this morning to, like, walk her, and I have some daffodils in my front yard. Everything's trying to bloom.
Yes.
And there were two bunnies right in my front yard. Like, I mean, steps from my front door. They weren't doing it. But when I came back with my dog who loves the bunnies, she's on bunny patrol. She's learning everything she can from the bunnies.
Yeah.
And she was literally about to rip my arm off. We were walking back to the house because a bunny was just sitting there, fat as can be, like right in the way between us and the door, just sitting there. And I was like, you are brazen,
right.
But got out of the way, thank goodness.
Well, it's good that it was fat. It wasn't skinny or anything like
that. No, I feed them all winter long.
It's your fault.
I told a neighbor, I was like, I have a bunny. And she goes, oh, you don't have one bunny. You have a lot of bunnies. If you have one, they're a lot. Yeah, I'm throwing like my leftover carrots and celery and lettuce out there all winter.
The obese fauna at Amy's house.
Yeah. That's right. It's quite funny.
Gorgeous. We have a great show tonight.
We really do.
We do. I'm so excited. Now, I've listened to this interview a billion times already.
Yeah.
Stressing over making it sound as good as I can. She's so charming. We have the wonderful, wonderful author, Sarah Waters.
Yeah.
She's bouncing around the U.S. right now, as we speak.
Yes, the Welsh girl who lives in London, who has written Tipping the Velvet and Affinity and Fingersmith, has a new book, The Night Watch, and she'll be at Women and Children First. Well, it's actually going to be so big, it's not going to be able to be held at Women and Children First.
Really?
It's going to be at the Swedish Museum right down the street on Clark Street, right?
Yeah.
Brought to you by Women and Children First. And,
if you know where Women and Children First is and you can't remember the Swedish Museum, just go there and look for all the short-haired girls. Because they're going to be at the Swedish Museum
where Sarah
Waters is signing books.
That's right.
Signing her new book, Tipping the Velvet.
Yeah, no, new book is The Night Watch.
New book is The Night Watch.
Night Watch,
Tipping
the Velvet, but she'll be here, which is fantastic. And she's almost about to head back overseas now, so.
I know. So, are we her last stop?
We're close to her last stop.
We might have to go to Huey's and get her like a loaded hot dog and bring it to her.
Maybe. I'm going to be there tomorrow night, and I encourage everybody who wants to go to go and get her to sign the book and meet her. She's really lovely.
Absolutely. And from the United Church of Christ, we have the Reverend Ben Guest talking about this commercial.
The ejector seat.
It's a beautiful commercial, but there's a little bit of controversy.
Well, we will definitely tell you about it because you will not believe who will not air this ad. It's a pro-gay ad saying that the UCC and other things as well, but showing diversity that they want within their church. And it's very interesting. And we'll talk with Reverend Ben Guest, who was who's the news director, who's who I talked to, and he said, you know, they did this a year ago.
It was that long ago.
Well, they did it a year ago. They did another television ad that this year they wanted to repeat it and do a different one, and they always create controversy.
That's good. People are talking. We're talking about it, and that's good that we're talking about it.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And we have some great prizes to give away. Real quickly to let you know what those are, we're going to have a pair of tickets to, you know, the famous Amy Armstrong, who has just bebopped her way and sung her way all up
and
down Halsted Street.
And beyond.
She has a new variety show, kind of like the Carol Burnett show on crack is what I envision. At the Theater Building Chicago with a bunch of her gal and guy friends on Friday nights. And we have a pair of tickets to that, which should be fun. And also, Buffalo Theater Ensemble is got their production of Visiting Mr. Green at the Mackinich Arts Center at the College of DuPage. And we've got a pair of tickets for those as well. Good things to do in April.
Yes. Very springy.
But we should tell you what else is going on. And, you know, it's such a big week. And besides all of that, you know, the Liza with the Z, it's amazing that all of the gay men and lesbians who feel like they're gay men, like myself, survived finally seeing the digitally remastered, glorious Liza with the Z, Liza Minnelli, who is coming to Chicago very soon.
I know, she'll be here in just a minute next week.
The 15th.
Yeah.
Or something like that. And then also, Brokeback Mountain came out on DVD.
Mm-hmm.
So gays everywhere were just literally in front of the tube if they weren't outside like bunnies.
Watching it over. Well, there were quite a few boys out, I have to say, even Friday and yesterday. It was quite amazing.
I bet that was all the talk were those two DVDs.
All over the place.
So let's tell you what all is going on in the theater scene. And we come back, we will be talking with the United Church of Christ about their new ejector seat ad, and we'll be talking about all kinds of fun stuff with Sarah Waters. So let's let you know what else is going on in the theater scene.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club.
Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Hiding.
Aware.
Innovative. Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
This is Sunday, April 9th, 2006, and you're in the Culture Club.
Buffalo Theater Ensemble presents Jeff Barron's provocative tale, Visiting Mr. Green, April 7th to May 6th at the Mackinac Art Center in Glen Allen. An unlikely friendship develops between an elderly man adjusting to a new life and a gay man searching to belong in a straight world. Mention code 5OFF, that's the number 5OFF, for a $5 discount ticket. Or a $5 ticket discount. Call 630-942-4000 or visit atthemac.org.
Looking Glass Theater Company presents The Old Curiosity Shop, a Victorian fairy tale of joy and woe by Charles Dickens. Playing at Looking Glass Theater at the Water Tower Waterworks on Michigan Avenue. For tickets to The Old Curiosity Shop, call 312-337-0665 or visit lookingglasstheater.org.
Comcast presents Broadway's Tony Award-winning musical comedy phenomenon, Urinetown, playing now at the Mercury Theater. The New York Post calls Urinetown pure gold, and Newsday hails it as a comic gem. For tickets and information, call 773-325-1700 or log on to www.urinetown.com.
And for more Culture Club, see this week's Windy City Times.
Hello, this is Andy Bell from Erasure, and I listen to Windy City Radio.
Diplomat Pharmacy introduces the HIV/AIDS Care Pack. It puts the right dose at your fingertips. Each pill cup contains all the pills you need at no extra charge. Call Diplomat toll-free at 866-500-6500. That's 866-500-6500. Check out DiplomatPharmacy.com for more info.
Obrigada, agradeço, obrigado ao Criador. A praia que é quase um animal, esse sal que brilha arde também.
And you're listening to Windy City Radio. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Peter Maverick.
And we have spoken with the United Church of Christ before. They are on a mission. They're on a mission to show that their church welcomes all and encourages diversity and really has done something to make Christians stand up and look at what it is or what they think it is.
Right.
To be a Christian. And we're very happy to have with us tonight Reverend Ben Guess. He's openly gay, an LGBT advocate within the church and beyond for years. And hey, he got his doctorate right here at Chicago Theological Seminary in Hyde Park. So he's a Chicago boy done good. Exactly. And so we're very happy to have Reverend Guess on with us tonight. How are you?
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
Very good to have you with us. And thank you for taking some time out of what's probably a very busy time for you. Right now.
It's an exciting time for us.
So now, I remember, was it just last year around this same time that the UCC produced another commercial as well, encouraging folks to come and worship with them?
That's right. Last year we produced an ad called the Bouncer ad, in which it portrayed bouncers standing outside of a church that were deciding who would be welcome into the congregation. And that ad was rejected by a number of network television stations. And now we're coming out with our next new ad, which is called the Ejector Seat ad.
And it is running here in Chicago, folks.
Yes.
You can see it on many channels. I know our producer saw it on A&E last night because we were at an event. And she said, "Oh, I saw the ad last night." And it's on Bravo. And a number of different networks, cable networks. Tell everybody about what this year's commercial is entitled for you all and for us, the Ejector Seat. Tell us a little bit about the commercial for those who have not seen it yet.
Well, Ejector Seat, even though I've seen it 1,000 times, it still is very funny to me. It uses humor to draw attention to a very serious topic. which is the feelings of rejection and alienation that many people have experienced from organized religion. The commercial begins with a shot of an African-American mother who is trying to calm a crying baby. And she's sitting in a church pew, and she's fidgeting around with this crying baby. And all of a sudden, someone in the wings pushes a button, an ejector button, that sends her flying into the air, ejecting her out of her pew. And in the same way, there's a gay male couple, an Arab American, a person using a walker, among others, who get ejected. And finally, a homeless person wanders in and takes a seat next to some nervous parishioners who expect that she'll soon be booted for sure, and they scoot away from her.
Yeah.
And the commercial then ends with the phrase, the United Church of Christ, no matter who you are, where you are on life's journey, you're welcome here.
Now, the United Church of Christ has had some changes throughout the years that has enabled the church has had some division to find out that people are in line. So how do you come upon when you're going to do something that people may find as controversial? I mean, this is an intense campaign. It's a $1.5 million ad buy. So they're hoping that about 60 to 65% of the U.S. population will see this ad at least once, going on between 3 weeks this April. What is the process to say that, yes, we're unified as a denomination behind this type of message?
Well, the United Church of Christ has a long tradition of social justice advocacy, going back to being the first predominantly white church to ordain an African-American pastor, the first church to ordain a woman, the first church to ordain an openly gay person in 1972, and just this past summer was the first church to endorse same-gender marriage equality. So it's something that's very much at the heart of who we are, to take courageous stands for social justice. This message really came about out of focus group testing that we did that found that so many people feel alienated and rejected from organized religion. So this is not a message really for people who are in the church to make them feel good, but it's really a message for people who are outside the church, who feel like the church has rejected them. And we're taking note of that, and we're saying that we're a church that wants to be open to all people and would be a church that would reject no one. That's really the point of this campaign, to invite people to a church that would welcome them as an open and affirming place.
Now, we should say that CBS, NBC, ABC, Fox, WB have all rejected this ad, as they did last year with your previous ad, the bouncer ad. But one new announcement that came out this week, I have to say, made my jaw drop, and that is that MTV Networks all gay 24/7 channel logo rejected this ad, when other channels like A&E, Bravo, History Channel, Hallmark Channel are running this ad. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. Last time around, we had quite a bit of trouble with CBS and NBC in particular, because they rejected the ad and said it was too controversial. And in fact, CBS said that it was an endorsement of same-gender marriage equality because it featured gay couples in the ad. We even pressed them on that, and CBS went on to say that until all churches, it becomes commonplace for them to accept gay and lesbian persons in their congregation, that they would consider this to be an advocacy ad. So we had quite a bit of difficulty with them, and this time around we were sort of expecting that the broadcast networks would reject the ad. But we've been quite disheartened this time around, because those cable networks, the cable networks that are owned by Viacom, which is CBS, and NBC, they went on to reject the ad. And that's about 12 different cable networks. Logo is owned by Viacom, and so they universally, across to all of their networks, they rejected the ad. So here we have a gay and lesbian television channel that is rejecting an ad that says that all people are welcome, and specifically makes mention of a gay male couple seen visibly in the commercial.
It's just ludicrous.
Yeah,
it
absolutely.
Is just absolutely ludicrous. Makes no sense to me. Now, how about any of the other networks, gay networks? Is Here or Q Television running the ad?
Actually, we have a company in New York that's been doing media buying for us. I can tell you that Here Network called me yesterday at home to tell me that they would be very willing and excited to run the ad. So we'll be pursuing that. So we were really buying a package of advertising that included Viacom, but we were really frustrated that Logo would not run the ad.
Well, I think it's just I think there should be a huge coup of gay picketers on Logo in New York. I just can't even imagine. You know, one channel owned by the same company is not like the other. I mean, you know what I'm saying? How can BET be running this ad and Logo is not running this ad? I mean, it just doesn't make absolutely no sense.
You know, and they were quoted with saying Logo was quoted with saying it's because of the political nature of
which
the
I
content.
Can't. Their existence is political.
Right? Isn't the whole foundation of their network and what they're doing political in nature, I should say.
It totally is. Now, Reverend Guest, tell us, there is hopes, and especially if, you know, more hubbub comes up about the fact that Logo, maybe there'll be a change, and maybe Logo will, I don't know, get to air this ad. But there is hopes to collect more money to keep this ad on the air through May. And if people wanted to help with that, or even to see the ad, if they think, I'm not seeing it, or I don't have cable, or whatever, how can people check out this story and see the ad and see how they can help if they would like to contribute to keeping it on the air?
Oh, thank you, Amy. That's very nice of you. We have actually set up a website called accessibleairwaves.org. which specifically talks about the issue of how a broader, more progressive religious voice is not being heard on mainstream media. And there at Accessible Airwaves, our most recent campaign has been targeted toward Logo in speaking that they should be more willing to run the ad. So I first of all encourage people to go to accessibleairwaves.org. And you can see the ejector seat ad, and you can decide for yourself whether or not you find it questionable. We think you'll find it funny, and we also think you'll find it a very poignant message about inclusion within organized religion. And then apart from that, you can also go to our campaign site, which is called stillspeaking.com, where you can support the ad run. The ad is running for 3 weeks, and we're hoping to extend that for a six-week run. This is today is Palm Sunday, and it continues through Holy Week and through the rest of the Easter season, and we're hoping to continue to run it for 6 weeks up and through Mother's Day. So people can support us financially, and it is through the gifts of our members and our churches that we're able to run this ad.
Well, it's truly an honorable and amazing and revolutionary thing to do with your money to spread the word and to show. I mean, we obviously know that the religious right gets so much airtime that, you know, for the amount that you're getting, you know, it's unfortunate that we don't get more that shows Christian diversity. So
I think it's really important that we say that rejection does hurt people.
Yeah.
And our focus group testing says that unchurched people say that they don't go to church because they feel rejected and alienated from the church. And this should be troubling for all of us, especially those for us who are in the church, who are trying to extend a welcoming invitation to all people.
Reverend Ben Guess is the news director for the United Church of Christ. The new message for their ad, the injector seat, is the United Church of Christ. No matter who you are or where you are on life's journey, you're welcome here. It's creating quite a controversy. If you would like to see the debate that's going on about Logo not airing the commercial and others, accessibleairwaves.org is the website, and stillspeaking.com, where you can see the ad. You can make a donation to keep it on the air through Mother's Day, which is their intention and hope. Thank you so much for being on with us, Reverend Guest.
Thank you so much, Amy and Peter. Thank you.
Have a wonderful Holy Week.
Okay, bye-bye.
And, wow, it's just crazy, isn't
it? Yeah, it amazes me that it's gone there. The upshot is this is getting so much press that the ad is still getting out there regardless of whether or not it's on the television.
And honestly, if you're a gay person listening to this or just somebody who thinks that, you know, more people should see this ad, take the initiative and send that stillspeaking.com website to your entire email list. Let people know this ad is trying to be aired and is being silenced. And, You know, it's a message of inclusion. I mean, it's a message that I personally believe, that God includes whatever your God or higher power or spirit is, would never reject. Mm-hmm. I mean, otherwise, why would we want to worship or believe that that's a protector or spirit or Holy Spirit or whatever?
It can't be a partial thing. It has to be all encompassing.
A deity of inclusion and diversity is what I hope that everyone would believe in.
I think that's what a deity is defined
there
as,
right?
There
you go.
Someone like that. Yeah, definitely.
We're going to be back with the Sarah Waters interview really quickly. We want to tell you that we do have tickets to Visiting Mr. Green and also tickets to Amy Armstrong at the Theater Building, Chicago. We're going to take calls for that here later on, right after Lennox gives us his tip of the week. So we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be back with our intern, Lennox McGee, after this.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Edible Underwear Maker.
Mr. Edible Underwear Maker.
Your true genius combined two of man's favorite things, panties and food.
I can taste it now.
They're a snack. They're underwear. They're a snack and underwear. Brilliant.
Two treats in one.
Gorgeous grape. Rock my world raspberry. Bodacious banana.
26 flavors.
And nothing says, I want you, like a man with a mouthful of underpants.
I want you, baby.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, Mr. Edible Underwear Maker. Because thanks to you, when it comes to panties, extra large means extra yummy.
Yummy.
She is laugh your ass off funny, and she is a friend of the community. House of Blues presents Margaret Cho in concert Sunday, July 16th at the Chicago Theater, 175 North State Street. Now get your tickets now, because this show is during the Gay Games, folks, and it's going to sell out. Margaret Cho in concert Sunday, July 16th at the Chicago Theater. For tickets, visit any Ticketmaster outlet, the Chicago Theater box office, or just go online. It's so easy. Ticketmaster.com. And, folks, it's a mature, contented show.
My name is Rhoda Morvester.
Hello, this is Valerie Harper, and you're most fortunate to be listening to the wonderful Windy City Radio.
Ow. Ow.
To Windy City Radio. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Peter Maverick, and we're here with the gorgeous
house.
The gorgeous Lennox.
Hello.
Lennox. I love saying his name. Lennox.
Are you ready for spring, baby?
I am so ready for spring. Today I just initiated my...
The bunnies.
Yeah, it was the bunnies.
How are you?
I'm good. How about you guys?
We're great.
Doing good.
Pumped up. It's going to be a great week, I think. Weather's going to be awesome.
It is.
I missed you at the Gay Idol on Friday night.
I know. It was too far out.
We were in Cal City on Friday night, and Lennox, you know, is kind of one of my compadres with the Gay Idol, and we had a sex kitten.
Are you serious?
This girl was, wait till she won. She got second place. The other girl was so cute and great singer, but the girl who won... She was like Angelina Jolie and Gia.
No.
She was like crazy. I was like, Lennox would have been so scared of her.
Oh,
I would
God.
Have like, I would have like picked her on you.
Mangelina.
Was there a lot of great singers
that
night?
Her name was Jenny. Is it Jenny? Jenny, yeah. How could I forget? Yeah. Yeah. No, there weren't a lot of great singers, but she was really fun. And, you know, she did a little divinals and all this kind of stuff. I was totally thinking about it.
Did you touch yourself?
Oh, girl. We all thought we had just had sex with her. I was like, I have to call my girlfriend.
I feel guilty.
And she started coming up to me. And then between her two songs, she reapplied her lip gloss. I was like, girl, you are more femmy than me.
Wow.
But she was sex kidney. And did I say she was sex kidney? I mean, she was like, writhing and
Amy turned on. Okay, I don't know. That's impressive.
Well, I felt really old.
I'm I'm still going to that one next year.
And well, just come to Sidetrack at semifinals. She'll be there, and hey. It will be rare. She had a little Gwen Stefani t-shirt cut off to up to there, and yeah, she's fierce. Yeah, yeah,
Amy was turned on. So she knows the exact. She knows the exact outfit.
Look at how blessed she is.
Angelique Monroe said, "I want to do her." I mean, it was Kirk Williamson, and everybody was just freaking out. It was hilarious. And in Cal City, we were like, "What the hell are you doing down here?"
Dirty. It's the burbs.
They got some girls
Diamond.
In the burbs.
Diamond in the rough.
Diamond in the rough. All right, I'm so sorry. I got so off track. Your tip of the week.
There's a great event going on at the Hot House that's hosted by Columbia College's Office of GLBT. Student of Concerns.
I love the Hot House. Very groovy place.
It's cool. It's called Gender Fusions 2. It's a queer spectacle of body language. And so there's going to be...
I should call this girl!
I should call Jenny!
Hey, Jenny, before the semifinals, we need you to perform. Say what it is again.
It's going to be performances of drag, spoken word languages, and then afterwards it's going to be a discussion about expressions of our queer bodies and cultures.
Very cool.
Yeah,
it's
on Thursday, April 13th at 6 o'clock. And it's got $5 donation, 31 East Balbo.
Is it a 21 and over show? Or
no, it's 18 and over.
It's 18 and over. Okay,
what you're looking at on the internet
I
is
don't
21
know.
And over.
I was thinking it was hothouse.com where you can find the more information, but that's
no.
not
No, the Hot House is a really cool joint because, you know, it's a not-for-profit.
Yeah,
and they have
exactly.
so much world and kind of culturally diverse music. And
hothouse.net.
That's it, hothouse.net. Very groovy. So
not
say again, this is a part of Loyola or Columbia?
Columbia College's
Columbia
Office
College.
Of GLBT Student Concerns. It's on Thursday, April 13th at 6 o'clock. They're asking for a $5 donation.
And the title of it once again?
Gender Fusions 2, A Queer Spectacle of Body Language.
Girl. Jenny, if you're listening in Calumet. Can I tell you that Angelique Monroe, like Kathleen turned to me and goes, "Is that really a girl?" and then we leaned forward to Angelique Monroe and said, "Angelique, is that really a girl?" And she goes, "I don't know."
See?
Hilarious. Even the illusionist didn't know.
We gotta go. I can't wait to meet Jenny.
Yeah,
I want to get turned on.
I know.
Yeah, but Kate was the big winner, and Kate was sweet. She did some awesome Mama Cass, so you guys will dig it. It was really groovy. It was a groovy night. Groovy night down there in Cal City. So DeChano's is the new lesbian club.
Look at that.
Check it out. All right, hothouse.net is the website. Go to the Hot House Thursday, April 13th. That's this Thursday, isn't
it? Yeah, this Thursday.
Wow, at 6 p.m., $5 Gender Fusions 2, 31 East Balbo.
Yep.
That's the tip
fun,
of the
guys.
Week. That may
Absolutely.
Be the tip of the month, let me tell you. That's just awesome. All right, so Linux is going back out to man the phones, and we want to let you know that we've got some prizes to give away. And I was going to do these separately, but Linux, why don't we just do them together? How about that?
Do it together.
Do it together.
Give
Keep
it to
together.
Them all.
So what we'll do is we'll do, like, caller number 6 and caller number 12. How's that, Linux? And you can let the first person, caller 6, decide whether or not they want the tickets in DuPage or they want the tickets in the city. How about that? Is that good?
That's a beautiful thing.
All right. So we've got tickets to Visiting Mr. Green, which is a wonderful play that's being done by Buffalo Theater Ensemble at the College of DuPage in Glen Ellen. And that's a ticket value of like $70. And that is for caller. Well, our callers are 6 and 12. So give us a call, 312-591-WCKG, 312-591-WCKG. Our other pair of tickets are for Amy Armstrong, famed Amy Armstrong. She'll be one of our judges at Atmosphere's Gay Idol.
Yay.
It's her variety show, Friday nights at the Theater Building Chicago through April 21st. So you've only got a couple more Fridays. So somebody call in and you'll win that as well. 312-591-WCKG. That's 312-591-WCKG. We'll send you to the Theater Building. That's going
to
be a zany, awesome show.
See that. She's got like, see her there.
Yeah, she's got like all of her friends. She's going to be like all the local gay color of Halstead and Broadway, like all doing a variety show.
Every color of the rainbow.
Love it. Love it, love it, love it.
Love her. And speaking of Idol, this Thursday.
This Thursday, we're going to be at Hydrate. That's where but here's the deal, because this is what I was just discovering, is that I can go to 6 o'clock to the Hot House, to Linux's Tip
beautiful.
Of the Week, and then
and
Hydrate
then,
is not until like 9 or 10 o'clock at night, right?
9 o'clock.
So I'm going to do that, and then I'm going to go to my church for the all-night vigil, so it's going to be awesome.
It's just a, it's a
pray
full
at
night.
Hydrate, pray at the church, pray at the gender fusion at the hothouse. It's just
it's a
night
of
reverence, isn't it? So, yeah, so hydrate this week.
I'm so excited.
You're going to be there. Miss Foosie's going to
be
there. Kirk Williamson's going to be there. Miss Foos. Pineapple's going to be there. It's going to be awesome.
Hi, hot dog.
So if you want to come and sing, Hydrate will be an awesome place to sing this Thursday, April 13th. Somebody's going home with $100.
Absolutely.
Two people are going to the semifinals. And we're giving away two pairs of tickets to the Putnam County Spelling Bee. Those are awesome
beautiful
tickets. Yeah, those are $100 tickets. So you're definitely going to want to be there. And we're going to have some of the cast of the Spelling Bee on the show soon. And next week, we have Tom Atwood on. He's got a new book called Kings and Their Castles, Queer Men and Their Homes. And I just got this book. It's got everybody you can think of. Any queer guy you can seriously think of, from fashion designer to crazy, like John Waters, to everybody. Like, what a photograph of them in their homes.
So it's gay celebrity cribs? Is that what
it's
going
on? It's gay celebrity cribs. That could be our new podcast, Peter.
Our
video cast. We'll figure that out. This is Amy's house.
This her cat.
That's right. This is her dog humping away. That'd be great, great, great. Hey, folks, I have to tell you, Sarah Waters has been one of my major idols, lesbian idols, since I picked up her book. I did an interview with her when she was nominated for a Lambda Literary Award back during Lesbi Gay Radio days in the late 90s, probably 97, 98. And that book just, I thought, was just amazing and revolutionary, and I just couldn't wait for her next books to come out. And I have read every one of them. Just finished The Night Watch, which is her latest book. She is coming to Chicago for a Women and Children first signing at the Swedish Museum tomorrow night at 7:30 in Andersonville. I had a few minutes to sit down and talk with Sarah while she was in San Francisco earlier this week, and thrilled to see what she has to say about her fame from becoming mainstream, one of Entertainment Weekly's top 10 books of the year for Fingersmith, her last book, gay or straight, didn't matter, and what she thinks about all these BBC miniseries being made of her books and lesbians on the BBC.
Mm-hmm.
See, they probably won't air that on Logo either, will
yeah
they? Who knows? But so here's a little bit of Sarah Waters with me.
Sarah Waters is the acclaimed author of Tipping the Velvet and Fingersmith. Her innumerable awards and critical raves, both from gay and mainstream reviewers and readers, have made her the it lesbian author of today. Sarah, welcome.
Hi there.
How are you?
I'm very good, thanks.
You know, I am a huge fan, and I bet other interviewers say that, but I really mean it.
You mean it.
I read Tipping the Velvet when it was nominated for a Lambda Literary Award, and I got bit by the Sarah Waters bug, and it's contagious, and you just can't write fast enough for me.
I know, I can't write fast enough for myself, actually. The new book, The Night Watch, took nearly 4 years altogether, it seems like.
And Night Watch is your new book, which is why you're on tour currently. Let's go back to where you were born and raised.
Okay. Well, I was born in a very small town in southwest Wales called Nayland, which is in a beautiful part of Wales. It's on the Pembrokeshire coastline, which is a really, really kind of famously lovely part of the world. But it was a very small town, so I left it to go to university when I was 18. And then I've lived in London since I left university, so I've been in London nearly 20 years.
And those 20 years of living in London have been the setting for all four of your novels.
Well, yes. I mean, that's the thing. I do consider myself Welsh, but at the same time, you know, I think of myself as a Londoner too. And, you know, like lots of Londoners, I'm an immigrant, you know, who came to London for the bright lights and the gay subculture and, you know, the anonymity of it, the great mix of people. So I still love London, and I'm still, you know, endlessly inspired by its range of stories and by the range of its history too. That's one of the things I love about the city, that, you know, its history is there on its streets. You know, you can walk down the street and you can see bits of the 19th century, bits of the 18th century, you know, right back to kind of medieval London. It's very exciting.
Well, and when you write, you experience just kind of a palpable sense of what London feels like in the different times in which you've written. Were you influenced by certain writers that you felt gave kind of that pastiche and feel and taste and smell of a place? Because it seems so evident in your writing.
Well, I've always been drawn to novels about London. You know, I've always loved Dickens. George Gissing's New Grub Street is a fantastic late 19th century novel about London. You know, Virginia Woolf writing about London in the 20s and 30s. And then, you know, in the wartime, somebody like Elizabeth Bowen wrote fantastically, lyrically, about the peculiar atmosphere of war in London in a novel like The Heat of the Day. And so with all my novels, I've definitely, you know, you know, other books from the periods I'm writing about have been my way into writing about London, really. You know, if you think about Dickens, you know, that's probably one of the things that comes to mind is his wonderful descriptions of, you know, the criminal dens of London.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it was precisely that kind of thing that I tried to reproduce, I suppose, in a novel like Fingersmith.
Right.
Which, you know, is set in the borough, a kind of criminal poor part of London. But, I had a real sort of fun, you know, with writing about kind of the thieves' kitchen and then, you know, moving to the kind of gothic country house. And I am very sort of drawn to those very typical descriptions of people's, you know, immediate kind of material landscape.
Well, and in addition to that, you have placed very much to the forefront lesbian characters in these worlds and, you know, sexuality and putting those lesbian characters there has been important in all of your novels. If we can, let's just go through your books, and I just want to get just a few brief thoughts on what inspired you. The first book that you came out with, Tipping the Velvet, was the New York Times notable book. It was set in a vaudeville world of Victorian London. Were you inspired by the theater scene and the dandy scene? Why was that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, London has a great theatrical history and a great musical history. And one of my starting points for the novel was you know, the male impersonation, which was part of mainstream entertainment, you know, mm-hmm. musical. Bester Tilly was one of the most famous male impersonators, a fabulously kind of dapper figure. You know, she was very small, but she wore these wonderfully tailored gentleman's suits. And so, you know, there are still big Victorian theatres, you know, still working in London. And the Hackney Empire was one that I used to live near, and kind of, they're very, very, very evocative. So it was a great history to kind of, you know, to work with and take on. And I was interested in sort of recovering it for a lesbian agenda, really. You know,
mm-hmm.
that's the thing about London. It's always had such a range of things going on in it that there's always been queer communities there. And for me, you know, one of the pleasures of writing has been to recover those, you know, the stories or reimagine the stories from those sort of slightly forgotten communities.
Were you surprised by not only the gay response to the book, but also by the mainstream success?
I was, because, you know, I suspected that the book would have a lesbian appeal as I was writing it, but I had no idea that it would kind of cross over and find such, you know, a bigger audience. And I think, to be honest, that was, you know, largely due to it getting adapted to TV. You know, that did loads. Suddenly my story was in people's living rooms.
And how did that experience go for you? Happy with it? Not happy with it?
No, it was great. I mean, I've had two books adapted now. Fingersmith mm-hmm. was adapted too, and by the same production company. And it was, they were both very positive experiences for me. You know, the adaptations are very faithful to the book, so I didn't have that particular anxiety.
I've seen them both, and I think so as well. I know my partner and I just watched Fingersmith recently. We missed it on the festival circuit, and so we were able to rent it, so people can go and rent either of these on DVD, Tipping the Velvet or Fingersmith. And I thought that BBC did such a great job, and both of us were like, that's exactly what I thought it would look like, you know, which is beautiful. So, The next novel, Affinity, it won innumerable awards as well, including that you were named the Sunday Times Young Writer of the Year. And I have to tell you, this is my favorite book of yours. And I don't know if that tells that I'm just dark and twisted and it's not all going to work out for Amy. But is this book deals with the occult. It deals with the women's prison system. I mean, you kind of gave us a woman behind bars, you know, whole analogy. Do you think that this... What was going on with Sarah Waters at this time that made you want to write about religion and occult and prisons and these kind of truly forbidden, I mean, bars separating lovers?
Absolutely. Well, it was very, you know, I wrote it very much on the back of Tipping the Velvet, really, because I'd loved writing Tipping. It was such, you know, it's a romp, it's a really upbeat
mm-hmm.
novel. But there were other aspects of Victorian life, notably the more gothic side of it, the big institutions like prisons and asylums, that drew me. And because I'd written this very upbeat novel, I was interested to see what, you know, what would happen if I tried to write a more melancholy one, a darker one. I'd been interested in spiritualism for a long time, and I was interested, as I say, in the prison setting. And so brought those two worlds together, really, and to produce something that did become a lot more gothic. And I'm delighted to hear that you like it.
I think it would make an incredible dark musical or opera. And I'm involved with a theater company here, and I'm always like, you all should read this. It's like a ghost story. It's like a lesbian opera or something. It's fabulous. I think it's magnificent.
There are plans to turn it into a feature film, but
excellent.
I don't know if that's ever going to really go off the ground, but it's a nice idea.
Well, you call me. We may just sing some ghost ditties about it. So Fingersmith was your most recent book before this last one, and, you know, many people will say you were garnered the most attention from this, probably because of the progression of your career. I mean, you were shortlisted for the Man Booker Prize. You were, I think this is huge, you were one of Entertainment Weekly's top 10 books of the year. I mean, if you're not mainstream with that, yeah, I don't know what you are. Fingersmith, of course, deals, as you said earlier, about kind of the underbelly of the survivors of the underbelly of London and how they survive. And you said you were pleased with that film and that experience as well. Where were you in this part of your life?
Well, you know, it was still very much that I'd written these two novels with a Victorian setting, but there was still stuff about the period that I wanted to write about. You know, there was pornography, for example. I'd looked at some Victorian pornography for Tipping the Velvet. But, you know, pornography was a big industry in the 19th century, and I don't think people really, you know, necessarily realise that.
Oh.
Asylums, again, my interest in, you know, imprisonment and big institutions.
Mm-hmm.
Wanted the sort of diabolical pleasure of writing about somebody getting, you know, locked in a lunatic asylum. So it was kind of all the bits of Victorian culture that I hadn't managed to fit into the first two novels. You know,
right.
Kind of brought together for that last book. And even more than the other books, I think it was, you know, I wrote it very deliberately in the spirit of a particular kind of Victorian novel, you know, the novel of sensation, a kind of a melodramatic novel, like The Woman in White, Wookie Collins' The Woman in White.
Right.
And it's a great body of fiction, you know, and it often contains very transgressive female figures, you know, women who've murdered their husbands or, you know, all sorts of very scandalous things and really challenge, I think, our ideas about Victorian women, because we tend to think they were rather insipid, I think.
And right.
Restrained, but you know, no, if you look at the best selling fiction of the 19th century, it's got this fabulous, wonderful sort of sex and shopping type, isn't it? So it was a great genre to take on and, you know, make tell a lesbian story. It's a sort of, I didn't really have to do very much to it, sort of nudge it over into, you know, kind of sexual deviance. It was
great.
I had lots of fun with that book. Yeah.
Well, and wonderful too, there's a duality to Affinity, a duality to Fingersmith, that now you've kind of taken times two. I mean, your new novel, The Night Watch, it's your first book not set in Victorian England, so that's a departure. It's set during and after World War II, but it's also a departure in tone, with character. You now have a man playing a central role. Talk about what was an inspiration for this time period? Why a shift? Were you through with that period for a while? And what kind of pull with women in wartime, or just human? I mean, you have men there as well, but I mean, especially the role of women in wartime drew you to the story.
Yeah. Well, I didn't get to a point where being sick of the Victorians, but you know, I got to a point where, having written those three, I thought I'd reached sort of the end of the cycle for now.
Mm-hmm.
I was interested to see what would happen to my writing if I did change period. And something about the post-war period initially called to me. I was going to set the whole novel in the kind of 1947 setting, which is the setting that starts the book now. But, you know, my characters were all a bit older than the characters I was used to writing about in the Victorian novels. They were all old enough to have a past and
uh-huh.
secrets. And I found myself becoming more interested in their past, actually, than in kind of where I might be able to take them in the future. So the novel moves backwards in time. And as you say, one of the things, you know, that really interested me about the period were the opportunities that the war opened up for women. It was the war, the war was a time of terror and, you know, trauma. But it was also, oddly, a time of excitement, you know, I think especially for young women who were literally, you know, able to do things, do jobs and all sorts of things that they hadn't had the opportunity to do before. You know, they were stepping into men's shoes, really, when the men were fighting. And so, you know, one of the characters, Kay, drives an ambulance. She's a butch lesbian, and she's really, you know, she really comes into her own wartime. I get the feeling that lesbians were right there, you know, the first opportunity to pull on a pair of boots and put on a tin hat, you know, they were kind of out there manning searchlights and, as I say, driving ambulances. And it was you know, the contrast between that and then what happened to women after the war, which is that, you know, the return to peacetime meant that men were coming back wanting their old jobs back.
Sure.
The excitement, the pitch, the intense pitch of wartime life and relationships, of course, dissipated with the return to peacetime. And it was, you know, it was a flat time for lots of people. And lots of people, I think, felt very displaced. You know, I mean, men as well as women. But, you know, my main interest in the novel was with the women.
Well, and Kay is probably one of your most contemporary lesbian characters, I would guess. I'm thinking of that now. And I like what you said about, because the novel is told in reverse, and the way you just mentioned that and having read it, it does. It plays almost like a memory, the way as we age, which we are every day, we look back on our life. Is that somewhere that you found compelling for yourself now? I mean, now you've had some sort of acclaim. You're not when you moved to London for The Bright Lights in the Big City. Now you've been there. You're on your fourth novel.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm 40 this year, and you know, like most of my friends, I've been through a couple of very significant relationships, and it was exactly that you know, my characters in this novel are in their 30s, you know, heading towards their 40s, and that's exactly that kind of life stage, I suppose, that I was interested in writing about, you know, with this extra dimension that they've had their youth, you know, at this extraordinary time during wartime, and now they're having to kind of think about, well, what next? Just as, you know, just as Britain, just as the world, just thinking,
right.
Well, kind of what next?
Your characters are so gripping, and what you've done for lesbians of just pulling them out of history is so beautiful, and you should be so highly praised for that. And I think you have been, not only by the gay community who realizes that, but by the mainstream. Do you mind being considered a lesbian author? Do you want to move beyond that, or would you ever write a book that didn't have a lesbian as a central character?
Well, you know, up till now and for the immediate future, you know, my main interest is still with, if not explicitly lesbian stories, then certainly stories, you know, that have that sort of queer edge to them, stories about sexuality and gender and how that relates to class, for example. I've never minded the gay label at all. I've probably done as much as anybody to embrace it. I know that some gay writers, and sometimes, you know, lots of my readers, gay and straight, say to me, you know, you don't need the label, you're not a lesbian writer, you're just a writer like any other writer. I think, well, that's fair enough, but, you know, so long as I have this lesbian agenda in my life and in my work, I never want to kind of pretend it's not there, or, you know, or kind of shy away from it. I remember Dorothy Allison once saying that every time she avoided using the word lesbian in public, she felt like a baby dyke somewhere kind of flickered and went out, you know, and it was the same feeling that there's still a kind of a political necessity to keep using the word, you know, and to keep sort of celebrating it, really. So, no, I haven't ever felt, you know, I haven't wanted to use the term. But having said that, you know, I feel like the lesbian label can coexist very happily with other labels. You know, I'm a historical novelist, or I'm a woman writer, or I'm a contemporary British writer. You know, all these things sort of sit perfectly happily together as far as I'm concerned. You know, that none of them is the whole story.
Absolutely. Well, and you give us much to read about. I'm going to ask you one more question. And I want to ask, of all of your characters in all four books, which one do you most identify with? Which one do you think is most like you?
Oh, goodness, that's hard, you know. I think the whole process of writing, or for me anyway, you know, it's often about teasing out a small part of yourself and kind of expanding it, you know, to a character. So, you know, if a character like Helen in The Night Watch is jealous, you know, we've all had moments of jealousy, so it's about kind of finding that in yourself. Or if a character like Maud in Fingersmith is neurotic, it's about finding that neurotic.
Hmm.
So there's probably bits of me in all my characters.
Well, that's exciting. We should know you. We don't even need to talk with you. Just keep writing books, Sarah Waters. That's what we need.
It's probably all my worst bits you get to see in my
Oh, it's not. You are such a delight and such a delightful writer. And I think more than any author in the past 6 or 7 years, I have tried to turn people onto your books, gay and straight. I just think you're amazing. And people can meet Sarah Waters. She's going to be be at Women and Children First tomorrow night, Monday, April 10th. That's at 7:30, Monday, April 10th at 7:30. Women and Children First is located in Andersonville at Clark and Berwyn. And The Night Watch, your new book, is available on Riverhead Books. Of course, all of her books are available at Tipping the Velvet and Fingersmith. You can see and rent the BBC movies, miniseries. I recommend every one of your books. Not a bad egg in the bunch. Hi, Sarah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hey, good morning, vanity. Hung over half asleep.
And we're back on Windy City Radio. I'm Peter Maverick.
I'm Amy Matheny, and we want to thank you for listening to us this week. We want to thank the lovely
Mickey, the intern.
And we want to say congratulations to our winners of those theater building tickets and visiting Mr. Green tickets, and thank Reverend Ben Guest.
Yeah, excellent.
Very awesome. Check out thestillspeaking.com to see that ad, or if you want to follow the controversy around them not playing that pro-gay ad on logo, go to accessibleairwaves.org. And this Thursday, come and see Peter and me and Lennox and everyone at Hydrate.
Mm-hmm.
Are we there 9, 10, 11?
9 o'clock,
we'll
I think. 9 o'clock, yeah. We're starting at 9 o'clock. We're going to have a great... and for those who don't know, it's the Windy City Gay Idol. Come out, do some karaoke, win $100.
Win $100. Yes, yes. People are going to win $100. Somebody is. And then two people are going to advance to sidetrack to our semifinals. And come out, you sing a little song, and bring your friends, because it's the audience that votes, folks. But
Absolutely.
We'll have some great judges there, Miss Fousey and many, many
others. Oh, the high pineapple.
Hello,
hey, hot dog.
And you can go to the hothouse right before and go to Ginger Fusion Fusions, which is also Thursday at 6 o'clock at the hothouse, 31 East Balboa.
And more information on that at hothouse.net.
That's right. And hey, folks, we need to let you know that this program is brought to you in part by Bud Light. Bud Light, always worth it.
And American Airlines offering the GLVC community exciting vacation packages online at aavacations.com/rainbow.
And that's our show for this week. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Peter Maverick. Please tune in next week at 10 p.m. for Windy City Radio, the voice of the queer community, here on WCKG 105.9 Free FM.
And my motto, be a bunny.
Be a bunny.
Get this podcast and more great ones like it on the High Performance Podcast Delivery Network from Podshow and Limelight Networks.
I love it.